Hey, Steelman. Hey, good evening. Good evening, Steel.
Good evening, Dave.
How you doing today, buddy?
Dave, I'm terrific. I almost broke my leg on the way to this podcast, but the universe
Nice.
intervened and said, "Steel, you need to get there. Dave has an important message to deliver to the world." So I made it. Taped myself up, girded up my loins, and here I am.
Steel, I see patients not on a daily basis, but almost that slip and fall on ice. But they're usually more in like their 60s or 70s. So it happens. Don't be ashamed. It happens to people much older than you all the time.
People have said I have the hips of a 65-year-old, Dave. I don't know what that means.
We got somebody with us tonight.
Oh,
It's
we
our
do.
good friend. He's back.
Spencer Gardner, welcome
You've set
home.
my record.
Yeah, you're just
Yeah.
padding your lead.
Is anyone even close to? I mean, Jordan's got to be what, number two? Then the number three is just way far behind these two
It's
guys.
probably Katie and
But
Howard tied.
we're prodigious.
well, guys, I'm excited because we have. I mean, when we put these shows together, we kind of do notes over the internet and work on it together a little bit. And as we were doing it, I think we all were doing it a little bit while we were at work today. And it was exciting. As we were putting it together, I was like, yes, yes. So I'm just excited. We're going to talk about occupying governmental buildings.
Yep.
We're going to talk about ghost towns.
Yep.
Of course, we're going to share some Unchained Melodies with you. And we've got some book wisdom that's going to help you understand why it's important to occupy government buildings.
Yes.
Just to start quick, though, before we get into the meat of life, guys, I had maybe my favorite question that any of my children has ever asked me. It was on Sunday. Elsie turned to me, and this was with no prompting. She said, "Daddy, tell me about Bilbo Baggins."
And she didn't get up from the couch until Tuesday morning.
So did you tell her about Bilbo Baggins?
It was an epic retelling of The Hobbit, and it did take, I mean, they were in different sections because we were doing stuff throughout the day, but by about 5 p.m. that evening we'd finished The Hobbit, and the girls were blown away. They hung on every word that I said about Bilbo Baggins, and it was awesome.
I kind of imagine this where, like, they lose their attention, and then you're like, hey, else, did I tell you? Hold on, you were asking about Bilbo Baggins like 4 hours ago? I forgot this other part. Did I already? No, wait, hold on, hold still, girls. I got something more to tell you. Was it sort of like that, Dave?
No, it was wrapped at like literally wrapped attention. If I tried to stop, like, "Girls, we gotta go to church now," or like, "We gotta go eat dinner," like, "Daddy, more Bilbo, tell me more about Bilbo." I couldn't stop. I wouldn't have told them the whole thing that day, but they just kept, like, they were on it because it's a fantastic story.
So what planted the seed? How did she first hear of the legend that is the Bilb?
I tell my kids stories, and one of them I've told them before is I dressed up like Bilbo Baggins for Halloween's when I was a little boy, and the last time I told him about that was like a few months ago. But Elsie somehow had grasped onto this, and she picked the right time to ask me about it.
So what did they think of Smaug?
Dragons are a big hit in our house. There's lots of fictional stories about how dragons are our friends. So they didn't like that he was mean, but they liked that he was a dragon.
So Elsa has asked me several times to talk about Darth Vader. And
Oh, man.
we watched the first part of A New Hope this last weekend. And so, like, the stormtroopers blast down the door and they shoot all the people, and then Darth Vader comes through, and she was very interested. And then she was so mad because eventually it cut away from Darth Vader and they went down to Tatooine where R2-D2 and C-3PO are walking around. She's like, "Where's Darth Vader?" I'm like, "Well, just one of the characters." And she's like, "I want to watch more Darth Vader." And I was like, "Well, we need to watch the movie, and he's in there, but it's going to be later." She was really mad. We had nap time and had to stop the movie, and she was like, "No, Darth Vader. Put on Darth
Man,
Vader."
Looks like someone's going to date bikers and only bikers, Spence.
That's right.
Or nerds. It could just be huge nerds, which would be okay.
Yeah. Dudes that are way into cosplay.
How did it go? Did she stay with the movie? Because my dream is to show my girl Star Wars, but it isn't time yet.
We only got to where Luke and his uncle buy the droids, and then we haven't gone any further. But I've told her the story before a little bit, so she kind of knows. Like, she knew who Darth Vader was before we watched it. Actually, this was the first time she had seen a video of Darth Vader, and it was nap time, so we stopped it. And then she was like, "Darth Vader's going to give me nightmares," but she still wanted to watch more.
Okay, so she realizes he's supposed to be a bad guy, but she's still okay.
Yeah. He's the most intriguing character. It's totally understandable.
Easily,
still, yeah. I'm just going to assume that Cedar's never asked you about any pop culture figure ever. Has that ever occurred?
No. He loves Bucky the Badger.
Oh yeah.
He knows family members. He knows trucks and farmers, but and animals. That's about it. Oh, actually, that's not true. That's not true. Lately, he's been asking about Shakira a lot.
Oh.
He's super into the song Waka Waka. That's Daruk, our neighbor kid's favorite song. This one's for Africa. It was like the World Cup 2010. So Cedar will walk around and go, "Shakira, Waka Waka, Waka Waka." And then we play Waka Waka, and he's like super happy.
Yeah, you can't ignore that request still. You got to play that.
Those hips don't lie, Dave. Those hips don't lie.
All right. Well, guys, I'm excited. So, Spence, you brought up this topic of occupation. Can you give us kind of a little rundown of what's been the big occupation news lately?
Yeah. So a group of armed persons. So this all starts, I don't know the whole story, but as I understand it, this all starts several months ago. There was a couple of ranchers who were angry about the federal government owning land in Eastern Oregon. And they committed an arson. I don't know what kind of building they burned down, but basically they committed an act of arson. They were convicted. And then recently they were sent to prison. And so in response, there were a bunch of supporters who are all armed. And some of them are relatives of, what's his name, the Bundy guy.
Cliven Bundy.
Yeah, Cliven Bundy.
It's not Ted. No relation to Ted.
I kept wanting to say Ted Bundy. And I was like, no, that's not it. Anyway, they occupied, there's this federal wildlife reserve or something in Eastern Oregon, and they came and basically took it over. So there's been this standoff, and it's been in the news for a couple of weeks, but it's kind of simmered down. You know, that's so 2 weeks ago. So people aren't talking about it as much, but it's an interesting situation. And I started to wonder, like, what do these people do all day? Because they're just kind of sitting around with their guns. Like, I'm sure they have some people kind of patrolling, but then do they just, like, sit around and fire and talk?
Huge game. Where's Waldo, I think?
Well, the thing is, that's what we're here for. We're here to help them and help anybody that's going to plan to occupy any type of thing, how to make that occupation better. Spence, I don't know if this was a formal survey, but we actually have the top 10 topics of conversation that these guys have been talking about.
I think it was actually a formal survey.
Okay.
Last week, people were all over the top 5 presidential haircuts. They said, we need more top lists. And this week, drum roll, top 10. We got a top 10 this week, Dave.
Well, are you ready for it still? Are you excited?
What's the number 10 most popular topic of conversation among the Malheur occupationists?
Number 10, most popular, best attire for occupation. They're talking what would be the best vest, what kind of cut of camo pants do you want, belts, are you talking, do you want Velcro, do you want leather?
You want the capris that can tuck into the boots, answer number 2. You definitely want some waders.
And which color do you want? Because it's kind of high desert up there, but there is a lot of – there are trees and things too, so.
I'm going with like the ice cold winter camo, you know, the little hints of blue, hints of gray, a little white in there.
Yeah. That's nice.
Slash of red across the gun belt just for a little flair.
Yeah.
How about vests, Spence?
Do you do the pixelated camo or do you do like the smooth?
No. Pixelated camo. Come on, Spence. I'm not making a web series. I'm occupying a federal building.
You're going all the way.
Yeah.
In 8-bit.
And as for the vest, I think definitely you got to go braided or like beaded fringe leather.
Oh, wow.
Sleeveless, dark black, like jet black.
Yeah, I'd go more for like kind of a life preserver vest from Back to the Future.
Marty McFly. You know,
the big puffy one.
Synthetic down.
And guys, what I'm thinking is one of those fisherman vests. Lots of pockets. Ooh. So I can have all my different occupation supplies right there.
Speaking of which, Dave, what's number 9 on the most popular topic of conversation while occupying a federal building?
Obviously, supplies. What do you got in your pockets? What do we need? How do we continue this occupation? What supplies are needed?
And a lot of times I think it's just like, you remember that guy, Larry? That guy just didn't know what kind of supplies you need when you're out, you know, occupying stuff. They're mostly griping about how other people don't have the right supplies. So you just drop the word supplies a lot. You don't have to get too specific, but everybody just catches the cut of your jib or whatever that expression is. What am I talking about?
The cut.
But you know, you know they have like one good example of Larry. Like Larry didn't bring his belt that one time.
Oh, geez.
So he was constantly trying to pull his pants up. You've got to have the right supplies.
Some guys, it's belt or braces. But me, it's both, belt and braces. Got the suspenders, got the belt. I'm covered.
And you know that there when Larry's out there like trying to start a fire or whatever, and he's like fumbling the matches around. He's like the only Boy Scout, the only Eagle Scout out there. And so they're all making fun of him. Like, didn't you learn anything in Eagle Scouts?
Like freaking Larry should have gone to REI.
He didn't make a fire.
Yeah. Oh man. So supplies, definitely. Number 8 on the top 10 topics of conversation.
Guns and ammunition.
Yeah.
I think it's a disappointment this didn't come in higher, but it's just surprising what these guys are talking about as we move up the list. Like, this is obviously an important thing to all these guys, but there's some things more important than guns and ammunition.
It's like, so do you prefer a smaller bore or a larger bore? Like, sometimes when I get my iron-plated gold-tipped, you know, I like to put it in the 32-06 and just take it around for practice, but other times I'm like loading up the lead-plated casings, and those have a real kickback, as you know. That's the
you know what they say, Marv, the larger the better.
Yeah, got to go big bore. When I'm out like patrolling federal land that I've seen, someone big bore, game hunting and stuff.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So that's a little taste of what you might get on the guns and ammunition front.
Number 7, I think this is something we all can relate to, conversation we've all had, just about socialism. It's the worst, right?
It's so the worst.
It is.
Thanks, Obama.
Thanks, Obama. Yeah, it's, they don't need to, you don't need to define the word. It's just, you just use it.
Yeah, Nancy friggin' Pelosi. What a socialist.
The Canadians, look at how socialism screwed up their whole country.
Yeah.
Socialized healthcare. Come on.
What is this, Cuba? All right, so that's number 7. Number 6. Number 6, there's a big controversy with this. Everybody thought this was definitely top 3, but this actually only came in number 6, Dave. What's number 6?
How to solder stuff, like your favorite soldering iron techniques. What are you soldering together? Is this for a purpose or is this an art thing? Why are you soldering?
Just, you got to get the joints connected and you want to line them up straight. So what I do is I get the soldering iron, I heat her up, let it run for a little while, toss on a bit of the pewter, a bit of the solid gold, melt down some iron ore, boom, solder that sucker together.
But what kind of pewter are you using? Are you using the pure stuff? You got to get the pure pewter.
No, I mean, I just use shavings from the workshop. You know, after
how long do you let it heat up?
Well, it depends. I mean, have I been using the bellows earlier in the day in the blacksmith shop? I mean, is the forge really going? If I've been making black powder, then I just toss it right on and I just make sure I wiped it off my hands first because obviously gun safety.
Yeah, yeah. That's a good point.
Solder that.
And Are we just to assume that they're soldering some type of cage or prison for federal agents? Is that mostly what they're working on?
Primarily, yeah, it's just a row of like zoo-inspired federal agent cages. Yeah.
So, guys, number five is something near and dear to both mine and Spence's heart. Something I think we could jump in and with these guys on. Beard grooming.
Oh, yeah.
Beard grooming.
This one's super huge among the Malheur occupationists. A lot of guys have been having, I mean, the word that's been coming out is a lot of guys have been really having problems with ingrown hairs along the neck. And so there's been a lot of exchange about that topic.
Yeah. Yeah, it's hard. When you see pictures of them, I'm not sure if it's like the occupation or if we're in like downtown Brooklyn.
Yeah.
All the shirts and beards and hats and stuff.
They look
good though. That's some good looking beards there.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'd like to know what they're doing. Are they using scissors? Or are they using clippers? Are they just shaving and letting it grow for a week and then shaving again? I really want to know what they're up to in there.
Yeah.
Or is anyone supplementing?
Yeah. Good point. Good question. Yeah. A couple of guys I've heard, they take the little rubber bands, you know, they tie it in clumps and then they just use the scissors off the Swiss Army knife. If you got your supplies, you're definitely prepared for that.
Yeah, you know they have at least one of those in their vest pocket. They're ready.
There you go. Okay, Dave, we're down to the hot stuff, hot topics. These are among the top four hottest topics of occupationists these days. At number four.
MREs and other food service pouches.
You just can't talk about food that comes out of pouches often enough when you're occupying federal lands.
This is kind of like a bonding exercise because everybody complains about the food.
Yeah.
So, you know, you open your pouch and it's like, oh man, dried peaches again.
Yeah. Scalloped potatoes and ham.
This turkey tastes like tuna. What the heck?
Probably packed during the Bush administration. The first Bush. Oh man, but when I was in the Coast Guard, let me tell you, we had some nasty MREs.
But guys, they're making some progress with MREs. The new ones coming out now, delicious.
Have you ever had the astronaut ice cream? The dehydrated ice cream, Dave?
Oh geez, astronaut ice cream, yeah.
That's good stuff.
Stuff comes in a pouch. Boom.
One time when I lived in Northern Virginia, I went to the Air and Space Museum specifically just to buy astronaut ice cream. I went by myself.
Did you walk around the museum or did you just go straight to the gift shop?
I knew where I was going, Spence. I knew what I was doing.
Can I take all of the Neapolitan, please? Like, we have 17 pounds. Perfect. I brought my truck.
17 pounds of dried ice cream.
Yeah. Awesome. So,
all right.
Top three.
Number three. Survivalism. We're talking man. How to catch rabbits in snares, making fires out of sticks,
out of nothing,
tracking stuff.
Out of nothing. You don't even need sticks if you're a survivalist.
No, you just stare at it and it starts to burn.
Catch the light in your hands and rub them.
Sticks are for Larry, the supplies guy.
Yeah, seriously, Larry, go get some sticks from REI.
Friggin' Larry.
Larry. You know the other thing they love talking about? Tracking stuff. Like, I could track anything. I can walk so silent. Like, sometimes I used to sneak up on Indians. That's how silent I can walk. They didn't even hear me coming. And I could track a person from here basically anywhere in the world. You could even give them a two-day head start.
And these guys love to talk about primitive shelters too.
Oh, do they ever.
Yurts. Oh, you man. Know, they love to... You have to put a little bit of straw in with your mud so that you can have a stable wall. You can't just put mud up there. That's not good enough. You got to put straw in there too.
You got to really daub it on too. Daub it on thick. Working leather. They talk about leather working, you know, when you're just out and about, you just skinned an animal. You need something to do in the evenings, get your mind off the tracking. You just start working some leather. Before you know it, you got like a braided keychain to send to your girlfriend.
Or some briefs.
Wow.
I heard there's been multiple arguments regarding how fast you can skin and clean a deer. So some guys are claiming like 15 minutes, which other guys think is ridiculous, but it's a big topic.
Yeah, no, that's the real question. Like, are you talking about including the draining, like draining all the blood out, or are we talking once it's been drained?
I don't know. I'm not there.
So we need a guy on the inside. All right, so top two, Dave. We're down to the final two.
And this is super important to all these guys. Making your own jerky, number two.
Oh, man. Guys cannot talk enough about this. I read a great story about a guy from the Malheur occupation. He was telling a tragic tale. The thing that inspired him to join the occupation was his old neighbor. This guy was a very staunch libertarian. He used to ride his bike everywhere, his bicycle. He didn't want to support anything that had a combustion engine, because you have to pay tax, a heavy tax on all the gasoline. And he used to eat only a diet of squirrel meat that he had trapped on his own property, because there was tons of squirrels. He was super fit, really great shape, but he dropped dead of a heart attack in his early 60s.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Turns out squirrel meat's really fatty. Cool. It's bad for you. So the guy joined the occupation. He wanted to get the word out.
It kind of depends on the season, because the squirrel, you know, towards the spring is actually very lean.
That's this guy's story, Spence. Man cannot live on squirrel alone, as the good book says.
Well, that's why I prefer my leaner jerkies, my wild turkeys, my wild boars. I like a lean jerky.
Yeah. Get some venison even in the lean seasons.
Oh, sure. Veal jerky, delicious.
So, Dave, do you have a rub that you like to put on before you throw it on the dehydrator? Do you ever smoke them, or do you just throw it on the dehydrator?
Oh, I do it in the sun. I leave them out there for a couple weeks at a time. I use my own body sweat, grease. I like to rub them a little bit around me.
So when you put it out in the sun, because I've had this experience,
solar
if you leave it out and then you go somewhere, the wild animals will come and take it. So you sit and you stand guard that whole time, right?
That brings us back to topic number 9, guns and ammunition, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So everybody's been dying to know. We've had some great, great topics for the occupationists. But what is the number one topic of conversation among the Malheur occupationists over the last few weeks?
It takes a little bit of explanation first, because all these other topics, they're important, but they don't get to the heart of the matter. And you can kind of run out of things to say. So these guys, what they find when it gets late into the evening, they want to really share their hearts and really kind of get into what life's all about. And the number one topic of conversation in the occupation is, what manner of heartbreak led you to this place today? She was probably beautiful.
Yeah. She was too, Dave. You've never seen another one like her before or since. One of a kind. She was
people
one of a kind.
People do crazy things for love.
She just didn't understand that the government is evil and all that it does. We couldn't connect on that.
Listen, at the end of the day, you either have to choose liberty or you got to choose love. And I have to say, I love my country more than I could love any woman. And I love that woman a lot.
So that's
a little taste. Top 10.
Top 10. So if we want to get into a couple more things about occupation,
I don't know if you knew this, Dave, but because we had announced that we were doing this topic today, we had hundreds of people that wrote in and they said, hey, off the chain with Dave and Steele, we know you guys usually have great recommendations. We want to know, like, we're thinking about occupying our own federal buildings in our part of the country, and we have some questions for you. So it's sort of an impromptu ask off the chain. I don't know if you got all these letters in your inbox.
No, it's overflowing. We have a really strong listener base in the Western states. That this is the actually only form of media that they take in is our podcast. This is it.
We really appreciate Alex Jones, Coast to Coast, for the referrals. Yeah, thanks.
It's and you send it in via, like, is it via pigeon, homing pigeon?
Yeah, I mean, however you want, really. Some people just carve our name into a bullet, and it finds its way here.
Yeah.
Yeah, first question for you, Steele, and for Spence. What movies should you watch during an occupation?
There's such a clear winner here.
Yeah. So what's that, Spence?
Oh, The Red Dawn, of course.
Nice. So
not the reboot. This is the original with Patrick Swayze.
Oh yeah. So as you might imagine, I've not seen either of them. So tell me about Patrick Swayze's Red Dawn.
So this super exciting movie. Actually, with our informal poll of the guys about the conversation topics, we just said, hey, what's your favorite movie? And shockingly, every single person there answered Red Dawn. It was just across the board. So the Soviets invade the country because we've been showing too much weakness in our socialism and too much nationalization. So the Soviets invade the country, take over the country, and the only people that can stop them is, of course, Patrick Swayze and a group of teenagers in Colorado. They run off to the mountains, and they just kind of plan little raids of the Soviets. Charlie Sheen's in here. Every awesome actor from the 80s has some type of semi-automatic weapon, and they're able to kill all the communists. Actually, no, I think they all die fighting the communists in the end, but still, beautiful story.
Sounds great. You know, I heard it was kind of a dark horse candidate, but a bunch of guys said, hey, if you really want to bring along a film that will win some hearts that might not be the best known, they really said, go with The Rescue.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. This movie, it's not about occupation, which is, I think, why Red Dawn comes out on top. The Rescue is a film about a bunch of young boys whose fathers are taken captive by North Korea.
It's more of a crossover. So if you love occupying federal buildings, the demographic, you're also likely to love films about North Korean hostage taking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the kids break into North Korea, they steal a boat and get into the prison, and they release their dads. And there's also, some of these guys in the movement probably have some issues with their parents. And you know, this movie is really tugs at the heartstrings. If you have a difficult relationship with your father, you rescue him from a North Korean prison, and it's going to be patched up.
Every time. This is based on a true story, right?
Yeah, it's loosely based on some memoirs. But the climactic point in the film is that they've rescued their fathers, and then they take off from North Korea in an airplane. And then some American fighter jets start tracking them. Oh. And so they have to show the American fighter jets that they're Americans, not North Koreans. And so this kid stands up outside of the airplane as it's going, you know, however many miles above the earth, and opens his vest and flashes a Bruce Springsteen T-shirt. At which point the pilots realize, oh, these guys are American. So then they escort them home.
Wow.
Oh, man.
It's amazing.
I'm pretty sure that movie has inspired everything that Dan Jenajohn has done in the last 20 years of his life.
Oh, you guys might not know this, but during the Cold War of the 80s and 90s, to prove you were American, all you had to do was sing Thunder Road start to finish, and then you could prove to everyone that you were American.
You could either take the citizenship test or you could just sing the song and then you'd get a passport. All right, hey, so this is a great question. This actually comes from Haas Culpepper from Loma Linda, California. He says, gents, I'm ready to occupy a federal building near me, but I need to know, I'm a gamer, and I don't want any electronic games. What kind of games should I bring along with me so me and my partners can play while we occupy some federal buildings? Non-electronic games for old Haas Culpepper. Anybody got any suggestions?
Oh my goodness, loads of them. You want things to take time. So you're talking Risk, War Game, Memoir 44, War Game, Axis and Allies, War Game. That's what you're going to want to focus on. Something with artillery and fighting each other.
Turn-based, lots of dice.
Yeah, Monopoly is a good one.
Interminable, tedious.
If you're playing Monopoly, though, you've probably changed the names of the properties.
Yeah.
To represent federal lands that you're occupying.
It's all like utility company. It's all B&O Railroad. Yeah.
Yeah, I think Park Place becomes Yellowstone National Park.
Yeah. That's awesome. I love it. I think a lot of guys are playing Sheep's Head.
Oh yeah,
yeah,
yeah, huge.
So I have to say
Pinochle,
that.
any card game as well is very
elaborate,
very enjoyable
bidding, and yeah.
It, and you know that's reflected in a lot of movies when you see like military dramas where the guerrillas are sitting around camp, you know, guarding their prisoner or whatever. They're playing cards. They're smoking. They're playing cards, sitting around the fire.
Something you don't see in a lot of movies, but that really is true to life. A lot of times the guerrillas have captured their prisoner. They're high up in the jungle, and they're like, "Hey, there's just two of us on guard duty tonight. Forget cards. Let's play Guess Who." Does your person have red hair or a large nose? And he's like, see. And then he put all the guys that don't have that down. It's pretty amazing. Is it hard?
Yeah, I've heard they're having tournaments actually up in Oregon right now. Guess Who tournaments. So
yeah,
it's a pretty fun game.
Yeah.
So guys, another big question. This is from Darla in Lake Charles, Louisiana.
Oh, Darla.
Hey, I'm planning to occupy a federal building soon. What do you think is the best meal to serve for an occupation?
Well, I don't think there's any debate. Squirrel jerky. You got to go immediately. High in fat, but it can really sustain you if you're biking long distances.
That's right.
Just don't let the occupation stretch on more than a couple of years, Darla.
There's a lot of trail mix consumed.
Oh yeah,
that's kind of an easy one. It's easy to pack.
And I'd say baked pastas. It's going to be a crowd pleaser, and you're going to have a crowd. You're going to have a crowd of occupiers. Everybody likes a nice baked pasta.
And are you thinking more solar oven, Dutch oven? Or are we thinking like ceramic casserole tin? I mean, how are you? What's your baking technique for an occupation?
I do have a Sun oven, so I'd assume that's what they're bringing. But there's going to be Dutch oven guys there too.
Yeah.
Those guys are kind of – they're a little bit douchey. So, I mean, I would accept their baked pasta, but I want a solar oven. Let's be honest.
I mean, the baked – if you're into like the real thick kind of crusty edges on the pasta, then maybe Dutch oven. But if you want like a light – I think if you just want to taste the zest of the tomato, you've got to go solar oven.
Yeah, you're going to overcook it in the Dutch oven every time, guys. That's what I keep telling them.
Yeah. You have to be careful when you bake the pasta or when you boil the pasta, too. You don't want to overboil it.
You can't be too careful. You want it al dente, right, Spencer?
That's right.
So I hope that helps you guys out for your occupations, whatever you're planning. But something that could actually help us all out for these kind of questions – so Steele, I feel like you came across a list from the Oregon occupiers of supplies that they're requesting.
This was sent to us by our show's lawyer. He said it's really important to get the word out. He says we want to really advertise this because you can learn most from people's prior experience. And the occupiers, I would say, that are in Oregon clearly showed a lot of foresight. They're deeply intelligent men with a lot of foresight, a lot of planning. And so as the occupation has proceeded, there's been a few things that they may have overlooked or that they might have underprepared for. And so they published a list of supplies that they would like supporters to send them. It's just a brief, you know, three-column, 80-item list. And as our lawyer suggested that we review the list and kind of highlight some of our favorite things from that list and things that people might not think about but that are really important to plan ahead and bring. The first one I wanted to know, this was a great item on the list, and I just couldn't puzzle it out. John Radio's ham. I thought, what the hell is John Radio's ham? And I was thinking about that. And then I thought, maybe it's not a thing. Maybe it's a sentence or a description. And maybe my hope was that it was a DVD of a film. And the premise of the film is there's a guy named John, and he's attempting to contact a piece of cooked pig meat with a CB or a walkie-talkie. And so it's a film about John radioing ham.
I thought that this was John Candy's final unfinished film, is what I thought.
But he was trapped outside. He was so hungry, he really wanted a ham. but he was trapped, so he was trying to communicate with the outside world via CB. Yeah.
So you're pretty close. I happen to know somebody that explained this to me. It is actually a film that is kind of a favorite among the occupier types, although it didn't show up in our list previously. I don't know why. But this is
first rule of Occupy, don't talk about John Radio's ham. It's kind of a Fight Club-esque situation.
Yeah, that's right. So John isn't a guy. It's actually the makeshift toilet.
Oh, so that's the John.
At
that makes
the
sense.
Camp. Yeah, so that's the John. And, you know, they're big into sanitation in their wilderness, you know, camp out. So they've actually wired it with this meter, and it sends a little radio message when it needs to be cleaned. And so we were making
like
fun of
reverse,
Larry, the supplies
reverse
guy,
booby
but actually
trap.
His name is Ham.
Oh, who's this?
That's his nickname. It's one of the little brothers of like the leader of the occupiers. And
he's
so
he's kind of a bigger guy. I mean, it's not really an endearing nickname. He's Ham. He's a bigger guy.
Yeah, it's Ham.
And I think it was actually the guy who played in the Sandlot, the guy who was the catcher.
Yep.
The actual actor has joined up with the occupation people.
It is, yeah. He's the little brother and ends up getting kind of stuck with all the grunt work. And so the toilet keeps radioing Ham to come in and clean it out and like empty out all of the crap that has accumulated in the toilet. So it's actually a comedy. It's about the exploits of this guy Ham and how they make him do all this stuff. But that's the most common gag is that he ends up having to go clean the toilet because it radioed him.
That's a good one. Good one. Any favorites for you from this list, Dave?
Just reviewing it, the first thing that popped out to me is they had Miracle Whip, then mayonnaise listed back to back. Still, if you've got mayonnaise, you don't need Miracle Whip. It's disgusting. Who are these people? Why are they requesting Miracle Whip? What's going on?
Just think about it. Think about it, guys. The one that really won my heart was this was a list of three items in a row. And this is basically like, you know, there's the famous trifectas in American history. You got like sex, drugs, rock and roll. This one's right up there with them. Hey, money, markers. Please send us hay. Please send us more money. And please send us markers. Just the order that
like
I'm thinking
of
these guys.
That's the new Red Hot Chili Peppers album, actually.
Oh, yeah.
Another great one. Ice scrappers. They're like, we just need something with a bit of spunk. We want something that's ready to throw down, ready to fight. No matter whether it's hot outside, whether it's cold outside, we want a couple dozen ice scrappers. Some just real feisty little guys.
And they need aprons.
4-inch.
4-inch, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You don't get the 4.5-inch. You get 4-inch.
Yeah, get some 4-inch aprons, please.
And the guys there are probably kicking themselves. They probably wish they heard this podcast first because on the list it says gaming supplies. They didn't say like what games. They're not telling people what they need. They're just like gaming supplies. Figure it out for us. Guys,
be specific, guys. We're ready to send them. We just need to know which supplies you need.
Yeah, if you already have a copy of Monopoly, sending you another one's not going to help out. Come on.
The other great item from the list, in addition to John Radio's ham, this is also communication related. So they wrote Midland Radio from Walmart.
Don't get the one from Target. That one's bugged.
Seriously, they go from the generic list of gaming supplies to the hyper specificity of Midland Radio from Walmart. Okay.
Don't go with that Sony radio. That thing's crap. That's from Japan. They're trying to invade.
This doesn't make me question their like survivalist cred whatsoever. They're like, yeah, what's the best radio you can get? You know, the one from Walmart. There's nothing better than Walmart.
Yeah, I don't know. What is so special about a Midland radio? I'm not really sure what that is.
It's like that radio in frequency. They're trying to communicate with their past selves.
They want to radio back and say, hey, just marry her. You don't want to end up where I am. Trust me.
So another great item from the list, they listed both shredded cheese and sliced cheese. They're like, we can't be bothered. We don't have any cheese graters or sharp knives. Do not send us blocks of cheese. We have way too many of those. Please send us shredded cheese and sliced cheese. Do not F this up, Ham.
They're just sitting around with all these blocks of cheese. Like, what the hell do we do with these?
We brought way too many whole cheeses. We need some more shredded cheeses.
We need some bricks for building another hut. Yes. Let's use this cheese. Someone can send us some real cheese.
Any things that were big shocks for you that appeared on the list or things that you just thought stuck out as anomalies? I think there's a couple for me.
The French vanilla creamer?
Yeah.
Weren't we calling that Freedom Vanilla Creamer?
I think we were. I mean, I thought these guys were patriots. Talk about going soft.
Oven cleaner? The oven where they're occupying is just not up to their standards of cleanliness. It's just, guys, we really got to clean this thing.
We're getting flecks of carbon all over our potatoes.
The solar oven doesn't have a clean cycle, Dave.
Don't you know it's a carcinogen? The other one that I thought was just mind-blowing, they have a list of like 80 items. They write eggs, and then they wrote needed badly. Of all the items on their list, only eggs are needed badly. And some things are like blankets, sleeping supplies, like basic life essentials, but they write eggs needed badly. And I just couldn't figure that one out.
That sperm's got to go somewhere to steal.
Hashtag sausage fest.
Sausage fest!
Fertile women, please make your way to the Malheur federal occupation as quickly as possible. They need your eggs to produce
Emmeline was disgusted when I told her that comment.
Generation of patriots. Oh, man. So we've covered, I think, some of the highlights of the list.
Yeah, so, Steele, I think you had a couple that you were surprised didn't really show up on the list. What do you think they left out? What are they missing here?
Well, for me, I read through this list, and there's like 100 things maybe on the list, but there is absolutely no mention of any plant-based items except for tobacco. They listed like 4 different kinds of tobacco. So it's a situation where the food pyramid is totally unbalanced in their requests, and there's just a surprising lack of real food items at all. They have hot dogs, hamburgers, eggs, flour, and then obviously shredded and sliced cheese. And then right before the list ends, they put it on the tobacco list, and then somebody, I think, just threw on fresh veggies. Like, they just tacked it on to the end of the list. But it was crazy to me that among this huge list, they're like, if we just get a bunch of hot dogs and buns, I think we'll be good for a couple months. Oh, yeah, fresh veggies. I'm supposed to put that on there. Just going to the media. But stunning.
With that diet, I don't think John's going to be radio and Ham very frequently. They're going to be all binded up in there. There's going to be some serious constipation.
Yeah,
eggs are needed badly to just loosen things up in there, you know? It's the egg-based enema method.
Yeah, and they were very specific about their tobacco needs. They had like 3 different brands of cigarette, and then they needed their what was it?
Copenhagen.
It was a specific brand, Copenhagen, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the best kind. It's delicious. That's great.
And, speaking of which, I noticed that there's a lack of toothpaste and toothbrushes.
Clearly, so every survivalist brought their own.
Did they pack that? Was that the one thing they planned for?
There's plenty of fir trees, Spencer. You just cut off a branch and you got a toothbrush for a week.
Yeah, these guys didn't pack changes of underwear, but they have tons of toothpaste. I don't believe it.
Man, so we just got a good 45 minutes out of the Malheur occupation. You're welcome, listeners. I know it's been on your mind. And good luck. Good luck to those valiant patriots. May their efforts endure forever.
Yes. May the government never again protect land from us. Let's move on, guys, to something that's not really related whatsoever, but something I've been thinking about a little bit, ghost towns.
Yeah.
Many ghost towns up around you guys in Wisconsin. Is this something that happens?
I think of it as very much a Western thing. I'm a little sad. So I used to like, I thought, oh man, there's so many ghost towns out West, but I didn't think of them as really a Midwestern thing. Although there is a place in Wisconsin that's kind of a ghost town that I very much want to visit. It's called Voree. Have either of you guys heard of this place?
I have.
Okay, Spencer. What do you know about Voree, Wisconsin?
I heard about it because somebody from church was out exploring somewhere, and they were driving along the highway and saw a sign that said Zarahemla on it.
Whoa.
And they were like, what? So they did a double take. They went back around to make sure. They turned around, went back to make sure they had seen it. And it explains that this area had been settled by a branch of the LDS movement that had, instead of going west with the main group of pioneers, had instead settled in Wisconsin.
And they were following a guy who they thought was the prophetic successor to Joseph Smith, named John J. Strang, I believe. They were the Strangites.
Yeah.
And they settled in Voree. He ended up declaring himself king of Beaver Island or something, and they've all moved up to the Upper Peninsula. They lived on this island in Lake Michigan until he was assassinated by some disgruntled former followers.
That sounds kind of like middle school or like elementary school kids playing King of the Hill. He was the first guy on the island and got to the top of the hill, and he's like, I'm king.
I'm king of Beaver Island. So Voree is this kind of ghost town near Burlington. It's an unincorporated village, but apparently there's still a small community of these Strangites who meet and worship there. And I want to go check it out and see Zarahemla. I guess I didn't even know that was there, Spence.
Beautiful.
You know ghost towns you visited?
Yeah, out west ghost towns, and Arizona especially, is a big thing. Because mining boomed in Arizona for a while. So there's a bunch of like mining towns that were essentially abandoned. There's one down south called Bisbee that was basically abandoned, and then just a bunch of hippies moved in and just took over the whole town. So now it's like an artist community, just full of hippies. But a few years ago, we went to one called Ruby, and it was an awesome experience. We went with some friends. We drove. We just wanted to go to the ghost town, so we took my girls, and we parked, and the gate was shut. And we had no idea, but apparently you had to pay admission to enter Ruby.
But who was there? Was it like a animatronic skeleton?
Who was there was basically more interesting than Ruby. This guy comes walking out, and I don't remember exactly how he had his pants on, but he had them on in a really uncomfortable way where it was obvious that this guy had not been wearing pants until he saw our cars drive up, and he's like, I got to get pants on. Fast.
I'm gonna go collect some money. I better put some pants on.
And then this guy explained to us that we each had to pay $8 to walk around this ghost town. He's the only guy there, and we all just said we don't have any money, but we want to walk around anyway. So he kind of thought about it for a minute, and we were all just kind of examining his pants. He's like, okay, and he let us walk around.
You know, the thing that I just read about Ruby, Dave, that is his claim to fame, is that between 1920 and 1922, the town was the scene of three gruesome double homicides.
Oh, no.
Committed by Mexican bandits.
Oh, boy. At least they weren't committed by this guy, but he was just out there. We talked to him for a minute. I was like, so what do you do? He's like, he just lives there all the time. He waits for people to come by. Goes to town once every couple weeks, loads up on his cheeses and his hot dogs, and he comes back. He's occupying Ruby, essentially.
Steals people's hubcaps, sells them on eBay.
And I should have paid him more just so I could get a nice pair of pants, because the things he was wearing, just it didn't work. But it was actually a pretty cool town. We walked around, poked at stuff, and the urge is to throw a rock through a window, but I was able to not do that. But
Dave, I read a blog called City of Dust, all about ghost towns in Arizona and New Mexico. It's awesome. And one of the things I learned is that in the ghost town parlance, you go talk about structures and you can ask how many buildings under roof there are remaining in the ghost town. You heard that expression before?
Oh, yeah, of course.
So how many buildings under roof would you estimate remained in Ruby?
I'd say about 10.
Wow.
But a solid, big, nice schoolhouse. And there was a nice little lake there. And from their mining activity, there was like a sandy beach that was there. So we played on the sandy beach by the lake. The thing I remember the most was this 20-foot tall slide that had been there when they had the Ruby school. And it was just, it looked like the most dangerous thing in the world. And it was like broken towards the bottom, but it looked like even whenever it worked, it would have been extremely dangerous. But I guess school kids in Ruby used to play on that.
That was actually the person they ended up finding responsible for those three double homicides. It was actually the slide that did it.
He just set up the slide. What a mean, terrible man.
All right, Spencer. Ghost towns. What do you got for us from your nerdy city planner archives?
This one's, I don't know if I would say it's famous in the city planning world, but California City, California. It's kind of in the middle of the Mojave Desert. And there was this real estate developer, also a professor of sociology, who purchased 80,000
acres.
That's
a great combination of careers. Yeah. Let's pause on that for a second.
He purchased 80,000 acres of desert land, and he had this vision that he was going to master plan California's next great like city. Mm. So it is, by land area, the third largest city in California, and he planned it. They actually built roads. So if you go onto Google Maps, you can see these roads carved out of the desert, and you can see like where the houses were supposed to be and everything. But right now it's a total of almost 14,000 people that live there. So the vast majority of its surface area is just desolate. Desert land that was intended to be inhabited and never was.
Wow. I like it. So what stopped it from growing?
Hubris, I think. I don't know. I mean, I think this guy just thought that if he built it, you know, people would come and move there. And they never did.
Spence, I can one-up you, because that's just what I do in life, is I one-up you at all times. They're very similar, but the real estate developers actually built this city. Ordos, it's in China, and China is just experiencing just ridiculous amounts of growth. So actually fairly frequently they'll build these giant developments that just never work out. But this is just a huge city. They planned it for over 1 million people, and there's somewhere around 14,000 people that actually live there.
So they sort of overestimated.
Yeah, they sort of got ahead of themselves. But if you look at pictures of them, there's just these huge buildings and restaurants and all these developments and just empty streets, empty buildings everywhere. There's just no one around, and it looks like it should be a gigantic city.
That's amazing. It's in Inner Mongolia, which is kind of awesome. I wish I could move there.
You probably could. The rent is really affordable. It dropped from like $1,200 to like $470 per. It's no problem. You could afford it. You don't even have to have a job still.
That's great. So have any of you ever lived in a building or a place that felt to you like a – have you ever – have you, okay, so people go and visit ghost towns, but have you ever stayed in one, spent a period of time, overnight, for example?
There's a cool town in Arizona called Jerome that was also a mining town that was abandoned, and then a bunch of hippies moved in. And so it's an artistic community, and still a lot of the town is abandoned, but it's built right on the side of a mountain where the mine was. And it's a really cool city, but there's just stairs everywhere, and we stayed in some hotel that was supposed to be haunted. There, I didn't have any haunted experiences, but it was really cool. Anytime you can get a ghost town and just fill it up with hippies, it's going to be a good experience.
Awesome. So, Dave, I don't have anything else to add about ghost towns.
Let's just close it down, because there's something that's way more important on everybody's mind that's been listening to the podcast the whole time. We're to Unchain Melodies, and I know what everybody's thinking. They want to know what songs we would want to listen to while occupying some type of federal building. Yeah. So, Spence, what are you going to listen to in there?
It just makes so much sense. Rage Against the Machine, because that is what you're doing. I think pretty much the whole catalog, but Take the Power Back.
Crank the music up.
Guys, this is what I was picturing while we listened to it. I was picturing those guys up in Oregon having a talent show, and one guy knows all the words to this, and he's doing it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Two things I want to say about that. First, I'm shocked that you knew what that song was, Spencer. There's a little hidden side of you. And second, Rage Against the Machine has really, really not aged well.
No, it has not.
What are you talking about? Come on, let's take the power back.
Oh, man. Okay.
So I got one for you guys.
Right, let's hear it.
This is by an Australian girl, because I know anyone that's into occupation movements loves Australian rock music. Her name's Courtney Barnett, and I don't know if you guys have heard this song, but it's called Nobody Really Cares If You Don't Go to the Party. The issue all occupiers are dealing with. They want to go out, but they want to stay home. They know they need to stay where they're at.
Profound, Dave. So I just went basic. The feeling, the power, the kind of pure primal motivation that underlies these righteous, righteous federal land appropriators. And the song that I thought was just, it speaks to the indignation people feel. They're like, we are so fed up with laws that protect us from our own stupidity. We demand the right to ruin stuff that should be kept safe for generations. And so this is a song by Dee Snider from Twisted Sister. You'll recognize it right away. That was an early demo.
Isn't that music video among like the top 10 music videos of all time?
On artistic merits, yes. I don't know about any other standards. Clearly, it's one of the top 10, yeah.
It's number one right now in Oregon-occupied federal buildings. So it's highly ranked.
Top of the charts. Spencer, we got a letter. This is from Wancho Stamba. He said, "Hey, I really appreciate the advice you guys have been giving." This came in while the episode was filming, but he said, "I really want to know three more songs that me and the boys can crank in case some federal agents try to storm us and we have to protect ourselves. What kind of music can get us, like, geared up to hunker down and protect the land that we have seized from our fellow citizens?"
Clearly, you're going to go with Ted Nugent.
The Nuge!
Yeah. I mean, nobody understands the plight of the occupier like Ted Nugent does. So, I mean, you could pick anything, but should we say Stormtrooping?
Oh, wow, we should. Talk about getting psyched up for a federal reinvasion. Stormtroopers coming in and nothing to lose.
Oh, jeez.
You know Ted Nugent eats squirrel jerky.
That he makes at home, certainly. No way he doesn't.
He's not patient enough to wait for it to become jerky. He just eats squirrel.
Yeah, that's true.
All right, Dave, what song do they need to have on their sound system to get the philosophical underpinnings, to get ready to protect themselves from a federal invasion?
I think that we can go back in time a little bit. Ooh. Just a man and his guitar. And he would play protest songs. That's basically what he did. But he did write a song that I think these guys would enjoy. Woody Guthrie's "This Land Is Your Land."
This land is your land, and this land is my land, from the California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters. This land was made for you and me. As I went a-walking that ribbon of highway, I saw above me that endless skyway, saw below me that golden valley. This land was made for you and me. I roamed and rambled.
Talk about getting back to first principles, Dave. That is a song that just warms the heart, makes you remember why we got into the occupying business.
As long as what you mean by "this land is my land and your land" is this land is the occupier's land.
Yeah, well.
That's understood, though, right?
That's what I mean.
Yeah, this land is my land, this land is your land. We can do whatever we want to this land.
Those are all sweet choices, and I appreciate them. But this is a song that I found because it's amazing. And if you guys are big fans of Under Armour, the clothing that you wear underneath your sports clothes to keep you
like armor.
Yeah, really jacked and stuff. This is by a hip-hop artist named T-Pal. He makes a lot of clean rap that gets people hyped up before they do crazy stuff like sports and federal invasion. And this is a song called Under Armour Boys. And as soon as you hear it, you will understand exactly why it's the perfect song for Wancho as he prepares to defend a federal building from federal agents seeking to reclaim it.
It's about about to get started. Big hitting games, bitten, don't be late to the party. It's about to go down, so we bring in the noise. And we won't let this team up, we the Under Armour boys. Under Armour boys, we protect this house,
Dope rhymes. Dope rhymes.
So good.
I heard he got paid like $2,000 for every time he said the word Under Armour. So he basically just made that the entire song.
Yeah, it was a good one, though. We protect this house. Gonna go on the field like a cat on a mouse.
I thought it was a lion on a mouse, wasn't it?
Maybe. Dang, that's even fiercer.
Yeah. It's very impressive. Very dope. I think that we've done a favor for everybody planning to occupy anything. Even if you're just going to occupy the couch in your living room, these songs are going to help you do it. But we got to close down, guys.
Sad.
Not every occupation can last forever. Most of them end terribly, but we're going to end ours in a great way with some book wisdom. What do you got for us, Steel?
Dave, I have some words from the immortal Henry David Thoreau. This is probably my favorite philosopher and writer of my teen years and early 20s. Probably no surprise to anyone. And he wrote a very influential essay. It was called Resistance to Civil Government. It's often called Civil Disobedience. And it was an inspiration to a lot of people. He wrote it after spending a night in prison for refusing to pay his poll tax. And it went on to inspire people such as Mahatma Gandhi, Martin Luther King Jr. It's really shaped a lot of stuff. And here's a passage from that essay that speaks to me. Thoreau wrote, "Unjust laws exist. Shall we be content to obey them, or shall we endeavor to amend them and obey them until we have succeeded? Or shall we transgress them at once? Men generally, under such a government as this, think they ought to wait until they have persuaded the majority to alter them. They think that if they should resist, the remedy would be worse than the evil. But it is the fault of the government itself that the remedy is worse than the evil. It makes it worse. Why is it not more apt to anticipate and provide for reform? Why does it not cherish its wise minority? Why does it cry and resist before it is hurt? Why does it not encourage its citizens to put out its faults and do better than it would have them? Why does it always crucify Christ and excommunicate Copernicus and Luther and pronounce Washington and Franklin rebels? If the injustice is part of the necessary friction of the machine of government, let it go. Let it go. Perchance it will wear smooth. Certainly the machine will wear out. If the injustice has a spring or a pulley or a rope or a crank exclusively for itself, then perhaps you may consider whether the remedy may not be worse than the evil. But if it is of such a nature that it requires you to be the agent of injustice to another, then I say, break the law. Let your life be a counter friction to stop the machine. What I have to do is to see, at any rate, that I do not lend myself to the wrong which I condemn."
And in this episode, I mean, we've had a lot of fun at the expense of some guys. They're doing civil disobedience, and they're not doing it violently. Sure, they have guns. They're doing stuff, I guess, according to their conscience. There's a lot worse stuff you could be doing. And sure, it's kind of funny, but I think it's totally appropriate to stand up against something that you think is unjust, even if I think it's silly that you think it's unjust.
I would say to those who are listening and feel sympathetic, it is a noble thing to stand up to injustice. It would be awesome if you picked something that was legitimately and truly unjust. There are some really gross injustices in the United States that deserve our attention. And maybe this case of the ranchers is one of them, but I bet that it's probably not in the top 10. You know, get out there. Occupy. Yeah. Occupy injustice. That's what we'll have people do.
Yeah, fight the power in any way that is appropriate for you. If it involves demanding blocks of cheese from the government, you can do it. But you guys are great. I've had fun talking to you tonight.
Thanks, Dave. Any parting words, Spencer?
Keep on keeping on, man.
Yeah.
Bring that cheese.
Protect this house.
Protect the cheese. Protect the house. Parting words for everybody tonight. You guys have a good night.
Thanks, Dave. You too.
Off the chain. It's off the chain. Welcome to this world. It's off the chain.
Yeah, we didn't even bring up the boxes of dildos being mailed to him. So we, I think that's the one place I think we held ourselves back. So we did good there. No, I was literally like reading it thinking like, should I bring up the dildos? And I'm like, no, I'm taking the high road this time.
For once, I'm going to leave dildos out of the pod.